Hi, and welcome to Women in Philanthropy. We are broadcasting here on a Friday afternoon from Brewdog Waterloo in the Waterloo Podcast Project. We're here with Robin Heller. Hi, Robin. How are you?
Hey, Michelle.
Robin, this podcast is to provide a space to hear women's points of view of working in philanthropy. And it was really inspired. I used to meet with some of my girlfriends at Ping Pong Waterloo, and we would get together once a month and just have a chat about our roles in philanthropy and what we thought and what we saw. And so this podcast is an extension of that. So just to kick off, I want to ask you, what is your role in philanthropy?
So I lead an organization called the Athena Advisors. It is a consulting firm for nonprofits. We focus primarily on social justice issues, the environment, race, economic justice, transparency, and democracy. And I'm happy to say that this week is our seventh birthday.
Congratulations.
Seventh year.
That is a testament. So I have a question then. How did you find this role, or why did you create it?
I stumbled into philanthropy in a nonprofit. It was Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and there was a great development team. So I was able to see how people who cared about a mission, understood a little bit about the numbers, could marshal resources for social change. And I knew that I wanted to go into fundraising. And so my next job, and the job after that, and the job after that, was in fundraising, leading teams, raising money, usually internationally, but with big organizations. And I founded the Athena Advisors. And I'm going to give you two answers, because one is what I would say to a professional audience, which I know I'm speaking to. The other is a little bit more personal. But I founded my own firm because I felt like I had that fundraising is an important set of skills, and I have important skills, and I wanted them to go to more than just one organization at a time. I felt a real hunger and excitement to be giving these skills, not sequentially to an employer one at a time, but to gravitate toward an environmental organization, or maybe something about nonprofit journalism, maybe something about gender and women's issues. So I wanted that variety. I mean, I needed that variety at that point in my career. So having a consulting firm lets you work with a number of clients at a given time. And we work with between 3 and 5 clients at any given time. But the more personal reason, I had a really tough job. I think philanthropy is tough. It's tough for all the right reasons. And I wanted to have a chance to do something I knew I could only do once in my life. And that was to spend more time with my 93-year-old mother. And so I did that and spent a lot of time with her. She passed away 3 years ago. She was enthusiastic about my work. It was at her kitchen table. I'm the luckiest person in the world. I wanted that. I wanted that time. And I wanted to bring back that time. And so the best of both worlds, time with family in a really important way, the wisdom to see that. And then above and beyond that, to just work with organizations around the world on social justice issues.
Well, I wanted to reflect that one of our other podcasts, their rationale for starting their own organization was also to spend more time with family. So there's now, because we have two, an emerging theme around women starting advisory or something similar to that to satisfy this idea of spending time with family. And so I thank you for that story, because I think that's quite interesting and perhaps indicative of how the philanthropic sector is structured, or how organizations support or maybe could do better at supporting women to be with their families in some of these roles. I have a question about, with all the experience you have had in fundraising, what do you think you are bringing to your approach in Athena Advisors?
Well, we do client consulting. That's a part of what we do. And we do that by being really solid about research. Because I have such a lot of experience, frankly, with nonprofits, and not just in fundraising, but I know about HR. I know about operations. I know about those different facets. We also do a fair amount of coaching of CEOs and boards. And one of the things I really love is one client had a board chair who said, look, you know, in my own firm, I know what I'm doing, but now I'm about to lead a nonprofit board and I need some help. And so our client hired me to be able to spend time with that board chair. And we have worked together for 3 years, every Wednesday for half an hour. And believe me, if it wasn't adding value, he would cancel. It's been an absolute joy to watch him translate what you do in a corporate board to what you do in a nonprofit board. There is a lot of difference.
Can you say a little bit more there about what do you think he is now bringing?
Yeah, I think he needed to understand pretty quickly, and he was a quick study. He is a quick study. The barrier between his responsibilities to see to the board and the president and CEO's responsibility to see to the staffing and the execution and the operations. And sometimes board chairs can get mischievous and over-involved in staffing. He has intuitively understood that balance. And what he has done and what we worked on together, but he wanted to do this. We always talk about board members bringing their Rolodex to the table, and he really did it. So he's able to turn to anybody on that pretty high-flying board and say, you know, I brought in $10 million from one of my vendors, and that's the only way this organization is going to grow.
And it leads me into, that's a great example, because it leads me into the next question of how does your role enable giving? And in that example, your role by coaching him enables more giving for that particular organization. But how would you reflect on that for your role more generally? How do you see your role fitting into sort of the philanthropic ecosystem?
So speaking, I want to speak personally about what I'd like to think I bring to the table. And I think it is a characteristic that a number of women may share, but I'll just speak about myself. The other is to speak about what the Athena Advisors brings, because we have set out to bring something special. In terms of what I do, I've been a really good listener. I've tried to be to CEOs and to board chairs. And a lot of times I've seen people who are excellent and passionate about programming. They make their way up a ladder. They find themselves running an organization, but they're squeamish about talking about money. And so for a number of CEOs, I can first and foremost listen, but then talk with them. And if I can invite a conversation about where did you come up with the idea that it's hard to talk about money, or even in your own household, how did people talk about money, or in your faith tradition, how do people talk about money? If people can get to the heart of that, not in a therapeutic way, but just in a reflective way, they may become as passionate about talking with people about investing in their nonprofit as they are conversant and excited about the programming within their organization. The other way that our firm is deeply committed, and this has happened somewhat over time. We didn't 7 years ago say, let's do this, but over time it's become clear we have an opportunity to create a stronger nonprofit sector. So as a firm, we have workshops, and those are pretty irreverent and interesting conversations. We're about to have a couple in the next 2 months, one about nonprofit, starting your own nonprofit. The other is about giving the African diaspora. So we want a stronger sector. We do some fellowships and investments, one of which is called Racing Upwards, and it is about having someone from a community of color work with us on a paid internship to be able to add fundraising skills to wherever they're at in their career. They can be a CEO, but or more mid-career, but they want to add fundraising skills. And I know that if someone has fundraising skills, they will be more competitive in the job market. They will be able to get a board appointment. And the higher they go up in an organization, the more they will be able to influence decisions about programming, hiring, and who's on that board. And over time, that will make for a more diverse organization and a more diverse sector.
So I love what you're saying, because what I'm hearing is you're talking about the listening. You're talking about many things that happen behind the scenes with chairs and CEOs. You're talking about an internship that can develop over time, something long-term, something that you're not going to see maybe immediate, and maybe you will see immediate gains, but something for the long-term. Do you think that is a particular approach? Do you think that's just a particular approach you bring from your experience? How did that come about to be elements that you think are key to your role and also what you've built into your business?
Well, I'm not sure that I can translate it in. It's certainly not something that's in my view, women only. But I can tell you over time, and I have some years at this, which I will capitalize on. I think over time, I've seen that there's enough. There is enough money in this world to see to the things that are unjust, the things that are impoverished, the things that are standing in the way of children and their education. There is enough, and there's enough money. There's also, I think, enough mentoring for people who are new to the field. There's enough resources out there to create a nonprofit sector that thrives. And as long as I stay in that framework of there is enough, then I don't mind sharing the stage. I don't mind sharing the resources. There is enough.
I love that. And this leads me into the next question, which is more of a provocation for you. But I, with your experience and with this perspective, what issue in philanthropy do you think needs airing?
There's a lot that I could mention, but the one I want to stay with is that we don't talk enough because we're really busy or because the headwinds are facing us. We don't talk enough about what a great job this is. We don't talk enough about joy.
True.
And this is a great field. Most of the people who come to the Athena Advisors, and we now have 19 independent consultants around the world in four continents, they didn't go to college and university and say, I want to become a fundraising professional. And they may move on to other careers, which is fine with me. They'll go on to be on boards. They'll be in their school's PTA. They'll chair a board of Red Cross. I mean, but I want people to know about this field. It is a great field. It's a great field for people who are hungry learners. I have worked in organizations that have required me to learn about democracy, journalism, SDGs, gender inequality, new trends in international development, peace and security, and to learn about these. And it's never been boring.
Right. It's intellectually stimulating.
It's intellectually deeply stimulating. It also requires us to be smart about data and to be good writers and to have good, and I won't use the word soft skills. It's not a term I want to use, but the emotional intelligence to work with people,
yes.
Talking about freighted issues like money and values and legacy and impact. And it requires a certain ability to talk with people about those complicated issues in an emotionally intelligent way. I can't think of many professions that call from me so much, and I have been doing this for 23 years.
I have one more question for you, actually, before we move into the rapid fire. And this has come up from another woman. One of the aspects of this podcast is I've asked other women, what do they want to hear women in philanthropy talk about? Because there are burning questions that women have that they don't always feel like they have the community to ask. So one of these is, as a woman working in philanthropy, how do you negotiate your pay? Or how do you negotiate your salary? Do you have any thoughts on that from your experience and the position you have as, you know, a business owner?
So there really was a before and after for me about this a number of years ago when I needed to negotiate with a new employer. I was about to set out and identify a new employer. And I'm happy to say that I was in a group with a number of men who were also job hunting. And their counsel was so different from what women say to one another. And they said to me,
do you have an example of what they would say?
Absolutely. They said, you know, Robin, we just go in and say, the next job that I take will be paid $200,000 a year. And I'll tell you, that took some rehearsing.
Yeah.
It took some rehearsing. So I have learned from men how to talk about money, how to stand firm. And it's counterintuitive for us as women, but if you have to stand in front of a mirror and practice saying what you expect. I also want to commend, in the U.S. there has been a real movement, really a sea change, so that you don't have to say what your salary was with the jobs you had.
Yes, I always found that really odd.
Yes.
And just didn't make sense in the way that career progression is changing.
Well, it was odd, and because it just kept women, frankly, and I'm sure people of color as well, who just, you know, you couldn't surmount a certain salary. You were not permitted to go higher and higher because your employer, considering you, could look at the most recent pay and maybe make incremental advances, but
never really. You just keep that wage gap.
It just continues, and I think that's a great change that's in some states has actually been turned into law that you cannot ask for prior salaries. I'd love to see that more globally and transparency around salaries as well.
In your experience, when women have asked for salary, so I appreciate you sharing that practicing in the mirror, and that is feedback that I've also received from other people. When they ask for those salaries, do you feel that they're met? Do you feel like women are successful when they ask?
Well, I do, because the message isn't so much about pay at that moment. It's to say, I know what my worth is. And frankly, I know what if this may or may not be the job for me, if the pay isn't at a certain point. And that actually helps people use their time rather well. And I don't know many instances when people have said, well, it's not the right job. By the time you get in that conversation, and I actually think it needs to be fairly early.
I agree with
this.
That.
This dance of we'll talk about that once we've negotiated about everything else. I also want to say I don't think that you know, we say to ourselves. I think women say to ourselves, if I don't get the pay I want, I will ask for more leave. And for some situations, that may be just perfect. But for many of us, I would just use the barometer. Would a man say that?
That's really interesting, because I do think as well in the nonprofit sector, because there are non-financial benefits.
Which are true, which are good and useful.
But I do wonder if we accept too many of them in lieu of pay instead of doing that work to overcome our discomfort, to actually say, well, this is what I want to be paid.
Yes.
And I do agree. I think that there's requirement of practice. And also the ability to know that it's okay, that this is how men are talking about salaries, is
Absolutely.
How other sectors are talking about salaries.
Absolutely. Well, and if I can say, the language is really important here. What this man said to me was, you know, Robin, I say the next job I take, my pay will be X, not just I want to be making X.
Well, thank you very much for that, because that was a key question that has come up from women I've spoke to. So thank you for addressing it in this episode. I want to ask you three rapid fire questions, if you're ready for them. You ready?
I am.
Okay, amazing. The first one, what is the worst philanthropic jargon?
Boutique firm.
Ooh.
Overhead. Campaigns and officers, as if we are fighting a battlefield as opposed to a more intellectual battle.
Wait, campaigns and officers. I don't think I've heard that one used.
Let's have a fundraising campaign.
I see.
I am a fundraising officer. Other language I'd like to dispatch.
You have a whole dictionary.
I do. Here, small business. We never call our business small business because our clients have huge impact. We choose them for that. I would put aside the word freelance. I don't know many men that use the word freelance.
That's a fascinating reflection. I hadn't thought about that.
And the last one I really want to dispatch is the word sales, fundraising as sales.
That gets a lot of overlap because
it does.
It's the way to connect the nonprofit, the for-profit role. And so what for you irks you about that?
Well, for one thing, I don't think that I'd like to hear from some corporations about what they find valuable in nonprofits, because I think that's there. It's another podcast. But the term sales, I don't care for it, because it puts a certain transactional quality to it. Now, I want to be clear, the tactics and the technology that is used in sales, I love that. You know, I use Pipedrive. I use spreadsheets. You know, I understand about moves management. Those are all things that come out of sales. But our relationship with funders should withstand the test of time. It has integrity. It has value. It's different from buying a microwave or a car.
Fair enough. Absolutely. All right. Well, you have a good list of bad jargon. What do you think the most inspiring trends are then, or trend?
The trend I'm watching the most is women philanthropists. I think in the next few years, this is not a novel observation, but I'm thrilled about it. I love seeing what Melinda Gates is doing. I love seeing what Mackenzie Scott is doing. And I'll tell you something, I don't think those women are talking about overhead, because they know what it takes to get an airplane off the ground, to fly it. They know that it's not just about the person at the microphone. It is about every other facet of how you run an operation. So they're not, I know some of my clients receive funding from Mackenzie Scott, for example, and these are people who are just saying, take the money. And I think that they will bring a lot of creativity, let alone their capacity to make sweeping changes with gifts of that caliber. In my mind, that's the most exciting trend.
I couldn't agree. All right. So the final question then is, what is the next needed role in philanthropy?
I love this question, Michelle. And it might surprise you. I think we need better reporting about philanthropy.
Ooh, say more. In which way?
Well, we have wonderful publications. There are two that I want to call out. I want to call out Alliance Magazine, and I want to call out the Chronicle of Philanthropy. But there used to be a time when newspapers would cover, and the New York Times had a philanthropy journalist. And in December or right around Thanksgiving in the States, there would be really good coverage about it. And there just isn't that anymore. And I think that good journalists, in particular investigative journalists and data-oriented journalists, are really good at looking at following the money. And our news sites, our journalists, it's a hollowed-out profession with fine people working at it. So they can follow the money around tech. They can follow the money around finance. There's a lot of money in philanthropy. And I would like the scrutiny of investigative journalism to have the resources to report more fully on every facet of philanthropy.
It's fascinating, because every time I think about a person or an initiative trying to start reporting on philanthropy, they get stuck in the current dynamics of what media is right now.
Yes.
To your point, it hollowed out. And so I think the efforts I've seen, while very good and well-intentioned, sometimes miss, just purely because of resources and
purely.
The way the sector, the journalistic sector, has gone. That's a fascinating answer. So that role would be philanthropy reporter? Or would it be
a philanthropy beat?
A philanthropy beat.
We just need the rigor of journalism. We need more journalistic eyes on a sector that has a lot of money at play.
Absolutely. Well, Robin, thank you very, very much for all of your thoughts today in our podcast.
Thank you, Michelle.
And thank you to all the listeners for joining us. The information on Athena Advisors will be in the links below. If you have any questions on our content, if you would like to contribute your story, please be in touch with us. And we look forward to bringing you our next Woman in Philanthropy.